Good afternoon, and welcome to the COVID Response for School Health Learning Collaborative. This is session three, titled Staff Wellness, Maintaining Health in Changing Times. This work is brought to you today from Children's Hospital and Medical Center in partnership with the Nebraska Department of Education. My name is Kim McClintock. I am a registered nurse with Children's, and I also work as the school health coordinator. I'm excited to bring this session to you today because I know that as school nurses, you have stressful, busy jobs just in regular times. But now with COVID amidst us and very much guiding and leading how we do our jobs, I know that this can add a lot of stress and anxiety to your work. So today we really want to focus on wellness and mental health and how to take care of yourself. There's a saying that says you cannot pour from an empty cup. I think this is very important because until you take care of yourself, it is difficult to have the energy and the resolve to manage the work that you must do in the schools. Self-care takes planning and setting boundaries. And even if it's just 5 minutes to step away, reground, reset your mindset, these skills are vital to being able to take care of yourself and then be able to pour your energy and positive thoughts and your professional knowledge into others in your building. I want to start out by saying that there is no video for this session today. Unfortunately, we came across some technical difficulties, and so you will be receiving an audio version of this talk. Now, please note, we also have a PowerPoint and a question and answer PDF that you can utilize for this work. And those are great resources for you to take and refer back to later or to even share with some of the other staff in your building. Today, we have two experts who will be sharing with us. The first one is Dr. Joan Dotton. She is a psychiatrist here at Children's. She specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry, treating patients with a broad range of illnesses, including mood, anxiety, behavioral, and developmental disorders. Dr. Dotton attended Loyola University Stritch School of Medicine for medical school. She then completed her general and child adolescent psychiatry residencies at the Creighton, Nebraska Training Program. Dr. Dotton's interests include community outreach, the adoption and foster care system, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender health issues, and school-based health care. Dr. Dotton sees patients in the Children's Behavioral Health Clinic, Dundee Pediatric Clinic, and four schools in the Omaha Public School System as part of the One World School-Based Health Centers. With Dr. Dotton today is Dr. Ashley Harlow. He is a child psychologist here at Children's. Dr. Harlow specializes in outpatient behavioral health therapy, addressing a broad range of mental health concerns, including anxiety, depression, disruptive behavior, and common childhood behavioral problems. Dr. Harlow received his PhD in school psychology from Indiana University and completed clinical training in behavioral pediatrics at the Nebraska Internship Consortium in Professional Psychology and the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Dr. Harlow's interests focus on providing behavioral health care and integrated systems of care, including outpatient medical clinics and schools. Dr. Harlow currently works with children and families in the Spring Valley and Council Bluffs Children's Physicians Clinics, as well as with students from Westside Community Schools here in Omaha. So welcome, Dr. Dotton and Dr. Harlow. I will turn it over to you. And just please note that because of the technical difficulties that I mentioned previously, we are missing just the first couple of minutes of the presentation. Thank you.
So, our main goal through this presentation is really to give you guys tools to manage all of this. One way to start thinking about all of this is thinking about the types of stress and how that's actually influencing what you're feeling. So there's predictable and unpredictable stress. And as we would all guess, the unpredictable stress is much more difficult to deal with. So unpredictable would be something that you had no time to prepare for. There was nothing you could do to prevent it. I think of COVID in March, and we got notified, you know, in 24 hours that schools were closing and we were all going to be at home. And oh my gosh, that was completely or fairly unpredictable at that point. And how much stress that was of not knowing what was going on and what was best for us to be doing for ourselves, for our families, for our students, all of that. Some maybe more minor sorts of unpredictable stress would be things like when technology doesn't work exactly like we want it to. Unpredictable, it happens randomly and you have to kind of keep moving forward. Or sometimes, and especially in these times, not really knowing when the workday is going to end. You know, it used to be a little bit more predictable. And now with everything all of us are dealing with, work has been very fluid. And that's not always been a good thing. Looking at stressors that are controllable versus uncontrollable, again, any stressor that really feels out of our control is going to be much harder to cope with. And the point in those situations is really to try not to focus on the pieces that we can't change at all, but really to focus on the bits and pieces that you can have some control over and can make some changes within. Preventable versus unavoidable stressors. Again, the preventable stressors are things that we can really look at and improve upon as they're happening or before they're happening. So I think during this whole time, you know, coming up with new routines that really help us, new ways of communicating with colleagues or even with our families and students, all of those kinds of things are stressors, but ones that we can really be more proactive about. Then you think about kind of unavoidable stressors, which are those things that unfortunately happen throughout life. So the death of a loved one, a serious illness, a recession, or COVID, again. And, you know, the main approaches to kind of unavoidable things that we all expect in our life are really starting to learn how to adapt, but also learning to accept that some of those things are going to happen in our lives.
And when it comes to dealing with stress, there are lots of different considerations that should come into the accounting and the reflection on what to do about the stress. And so when we think about stress management, it gives you a range of tools to reset this alarm system that we're talking about to avoid burnout. Without stress management, all too often your body is on high alert all the time and you don't get any break from that, and it pushes you into the red zone and potentially into that burnout. And so as we talk about the different approaches to managing stress, action-oriented is one way to come at the stressful factor. And that action-oriented approaches are used to take action to change a stressful situation. And so it addresses the factors that are causing the increased stress. And it's much more focused on the world around you and what you do about the thing that's affecting you and your stress. Emotion-oriented approaches are used to change the ways we perceive the stressful situation. And so it's very targeted on sort of the cognitions and emotional response to that stressor that you're encountering, and where we reflect on our experience of the situation and reorient our interpretation. And then finally are the acceptance-oriented approaches. And so these are used for dealing with stressful situations that you can't control. Working with colleagues and working with ourselves to determine and reflect on these factors that are increasing our stress can guide which sort of family of approaches that you might use in the situation. And finding the right approach is really important, because if you are trying to manage your stress in an action-oriented way and it's not something that you have control of, you can really exacerbate the amount of stress that you're experiencing, because you're trying to take all these steps and managing a situation that's causing you stress, but it's not getting you anywhere, because there's not a whole lot you can do. I think that Joan's example was great in terms of managing the stress related to losing a loved one, or managing a lack of personal protective equipment in the early stages of COVID, that when we're talking about those kinds of stress, we don't have a whole lot of choice but to go the acceptance route.
So we did want to talk a little bit more about kind of signs of emotional distress. And we kind of separated this first part of the presentation out as kind of staff care and things to be looking for in colleagues. But obviously all of this applies to ourselves as well. But really noticing if there are way more feelings of kind of fear, anger, sadness, numbness, frustration, all of those things, changes in appetite, energy, and activity levels, trouble focusing, I think is very common when people are starting to feel overwhelmed. It's like your mind just no longer functions the way it used to. For sure, sleep problems, nightmares. And then we do look for all of those same physical symptoms that could be a sign that somebody is really at high stress levels. We also look at any chronic health problem can always get worse. We all, I think, know there's such a huge mind-body connection, and chronic health problems can definitely worsen in the face of stress. And then, you know, there's multiple reports out even talking about during the pandemic, the use of alcohol and tobacco and other drugs have gone up. So watching for those signs as well is really important.
One thing I might mention on this slide, kind of another guiding principle as we were putting this presentation together, is trying to bring together as much sort of material and resources that you can take back with you to your schools and your colleagues and use for yourself. And so this slide is a particular example of that, because this single slide could probably be an hour-long presentation in and of itself. We talked about each one of these different ways of addressing stress. And so I'm going to go quickly through some and then kind of glaze over some of the other ones. But I would mention to everybody watching today, if you hear anything that you like or that you want to take this back and use this, there are extensive notes in the presentation. And so this is one place where you can take a whole lot of content and information and share it with colleagues. And so all kinds of different ways to address stress. Talking about tolerations is one that I really like and I think is really helpful. So tolerations are stressors in our daily life that often like blend in with our lifestyle but drain our energy. It's anything that you wouldn't choose to include in your life if given a choice can be a toleration. It's sort of a hindering influence that you put up with every day. When I think about this, I think about in our backyard, we have a gate and the latch on the gate doesn't work. And walking in and out of our house, we have to go through this gate at least twice a day. And it's always a hassle because it sticks and it doesn't work. And it's just like grinds on you. And so that's an example of this. And most of us have a long list of the things that we tolerate in our life that just grind on us. A messy desk or carpets that need cleaning or a lack of closet space, a partner who snores, piles of laundry. During this pandemic and the quarantine, I've heard lots of parents talking about allowing much more screen time and sugar than they would have in the past. And parents express this as a source of guilt and stress, but it's a great example of a toleration that we wouldn't do this normally, but we're stressed and it's building up and it grinds on us, the fact that we're either engaging in the behavior or it's something going on in the world that bothers us. And so ways to go about addressing this include just getting it done. So getting that pile of laundry sorted through, even if it costs a little bit of sleep or a little bit of time with friends, that you just get it done. Or you dump it off your list, that when you look at the list of tolerations that you've written down, you might not decide it's very important and you just let it go. Or giving it to someone else to fix, discussing it with a partner. I would also say that I am a frequent source of tolerations for my partner. And it really is a great process to talk about this, because sometimes I can reduce the amount of stress it causes by apologizing, and other times it's something that I gotta either stop doing or deal with. But there are lots of ways to go about managing those tolerations. Procrastination is another really important one. And an interesting one to think about, because procrastination is not the same as laziness. Laziness affects apathy and inactivity and an unwillingness to act. Procrastination involves ignoring an unpleasant but often important task in favor of one that's easier or more enjoyable. And so really deciding if this is procrastination and how you're going to go about addressing this procrastination. Prioritizing is important, time management, addressing time conflicts, so going about that particular source of stress. Monotasking is another one that I think is really important to highlight, because so often we're in a position where we think that we have to multitask and have multiple things going on simultaneously in order to get them done. But the brain has limited capacity for cognitive bandwidth, and therefore the more you multitask, the more times your brain has to switch gears and remember where it left off. And especially in schools, that sometimes tasks present themselves in ways that you can't isolate your attention to one thing and you have to go and address it. But when you can make the decision about multitasking, focusing on one thing at a time is actually much more efficient and productive, and it minimizes stress and making mistakes. And with that, learning to say no, I think, is hard for all of us. Scheduling negative time is the last one I want to talk about. Scheduling negative time is deciding that I am not going to have any distractions and I'm going to just let myself be. And so I know that all of us lead very busy lives. And so this might be the decision to drive to work without the radio on, without any podcasts playing, that this is just time to be quiet, which is incredibly important when we talk about managing stress.
Okay, so some more strategies for sort of wrapping your head around this and kind of thinking about how to manage all of this time. So the first thing is accepting that change is part of life. That sounds super obvious and it's easy to say, but it's not always easy to do. And so really thinking about that certain goals that we had for this 2021 school year or even the 2019-20 school year, they are just not possible anymore because of change. And the goal is to really focus on the pieces, again, that can be altered given your current situation. Reframe the issue sometimes sounds a little cheesy, but it is helpful to do. So, you know, you're given, it's turning, you know, lemons into lemonade sort of thing. But really trying to make yourself look from a different viewpoint and find the pieces of the stuff that's really stressful or the stuff that you're just not enjoying, find the pieces that you really can draw from. So I was even thinking, even for us, you know, doing so many appointments via telehealth initially was not what we all wanted to be doing, but we have found so many good things about telehealth and new technologies that I think I'm sure all of the teachers and staff at school are also feeling like some of the technology is helpful to learn. Not that all of it is, but some of it is. Another piece is just sort of keeping the long-term perspective. So if there's something, you know, today that is really getting under your skin, trying to think about, do I think this will matter next week or next month or next year? Is this something to really allow to get under my skin and make me stressed? Or is this something I just need to move past because it's not part of my overall plan for today or this week or et cetera? And then I think the biggest thing is adjusting our standards. I think all of us have had to do that continually through this pandemic. And I read a great article about thinking about going on a plane trip and thinking about going on a plane trip just as yourself and your standards for that plane trip. You might think you'd like to read a book while you're on the plane, or maybe you'll chat with the person next to you and you just want to get there safely and you know, make sure the flight is comfortable and those kinds of things. And then you think about taking a plane trip with an infant or a couple of toddlers, and your standards are now completely different. You know, you're trying to make sure the baby doesn't cry too much during the entire flight, that your toddler sits still. I mean, your standards have totally shifted. And really recognizing what's possible. There's no way you could read a book or chit chat with your neighbor through a whole flight if you've got an infant and toddlers with you. And so you have to adjust your standards in so many of these stressful situations.
I love the analogy of flying on an airplane, because I think that flying with infants and toddlers, if I can get through the flight without having to change a dirty diaper, it's a success.
Yes.
So this is another slide that could be an entire presentation. But when we talk about wellness, we're talking about practices that coexist with stress, not activities that eliminate stress. And so the activities that are listed here are designed to strengthen and rejuvenate us to better deal with the stresses that we encounter. There are a number of different categories on here in terms of like physical things that you can do, like deep breathing or progressive muscle relaxation or hand meditation. There are things that you do with others in terms of personal sharing. There's also your own emotional awareness and self-compassion. I think that the two first ones on the list, I really, really like the silver lining, the gratitude, because it captures what Joan was saying before about looking at the benefits of telehealth or technology. One of the other things that I think about, especially in terms of gratitude and silver linings in coronavirus times, is it seems like it's really made people appreciate live instruction and teachers, because having kids home and trying to figure out virtual instruction, that technology is such a wonderful thing and gives access in all different kinds of ways. But if we really want our kids learning, and not only learning academic content, but social skills, they need those live, in-person, face-to-face teachers to really get the benefit out of that. And so thinking about some of the silver linings in coronavirus times, there's no doubt that the situation has had terrible consequences for so many people, but it's still okay to think about the benefits that have come our way as a result of having this opportunity to reflect and having so many things disrupted. What are some of the benefits of having that reflection and having that time to focus on what may be better and what we're grateful for in coronavirus times and once this will pass?
Okay, so moving on to self-care, which again, these topics clearly overlap, but we wanted to make a distinction for you guys, because I do know that teachers and families and staff rely on all of you for answering so many questions about physical, but also mental health. And during the pandemic, I do feel like mental health has been much more easily talked about from a lot of angles. And so I think those topics will come up much more often. And I think staff will probably be reaching out to you more often. And so that first section was supposed to be sort of focused on staff care. And this section, really start thinking about yourself at this point. So I have to give Dr. Harlow credit for putting together most of this presentation. And when I was looking through the slides, I had to actually look up the definition of liminal space because I had not heard of it. And so it's this really cool concept of being in a place where you're not exactly the way you were before, but you're not exactly on to something else yet. It's that transition space. And even some descriptions of the word are like a season of waiting, a season of not knowing. And it's like, holy cow, that's exactly where we're at, or that's maybe where I'm at. And so that feels really useful to remember that we, as a country, as humans, we don't have all the answers right now. And so many of the changes that happen in our day-to-day lives happen quickly, but this transition to sort of a new way of thinking and being and doing our work and doing our home life, those transitions sometimes take time. And one of the really important points is that so often our culture has taught us to try to either pretend that discomfort isn't there or to get past it as quickly as possible and say that you've made it to the other side and you're fine and you're going to keep going. But real transformation and real healing and real soothing from stress can happen when we're able to really kind of sit with being uncomfortable and evaluate it. And so that's what some of the remainder of the talk will be about.
And so it seems, let me get it over there. One of the things that Joan was saying on the previous slide that seems really important is this idea of discomfort and like painful feelings being normal. And I think that's a really important place to start, because when you have the expectation that what I'm going through is what I'm supposed to be going through, and this meets the expectations of being in this really uncertain time and space as we move from one life to another life or another, or one sort of way of being to a new way of being, that it's perfectly reasonable and should really be happening, that there's anger and there's difficulty focusing and these worried thoughts and feeling antsy. And so being able to monitor this in ourselves and noticing that I'm getting irritated or angrier than normal at people, and angry at things that wouldn't make you upset in the past. And so they might be thoughts like, I can't stand this, or when will this end? Or I'm the only one who is making the right decisions in this situation, or people aren't listening to me and nobody understands. Difficulty focusing. So as your brain tries to make sense of the transition, and it's just, it's amazing to think about all the transitions that we've made as we're surrounded by plexiglass and wearing masks, and are the masks clean, and do we have enough hand sanitizer and our gloves, and all the different protocols and procedures that are required just to get a child in the building, which I think Dr. Tomek wants to talk about at some point here, how to get these temperature checks done. But that the feelings associated with all of these changes aren't just about learning something new. It is about being in this transitional place.
So how do we do this? How do you learn to sort of sit in this transition and be all right with not knowing and feeling yucky at times and feeling uncomfortable? So one approach is truly starting to kind of name the feelings that you're having. So it is pretty normal for all of us to feel antsy when we don't know exactly what's going on. A lot of times we encourage folks to really name or try to figure out a description for what they're feeling. So even being able to say, I'm feeling really agitated right now, but in this situation, that seems pretty normal. Let me kind of sit with this for a little bit. Let me feel agitated for a little while. And that can kind of soften the emotion down and allow you to see, like, where is it coming from and what do I want to do with it? Do I need to act on it? Do I need to just let it pass? Is it telling me something else about this situation that I need to change? So really slowing yourself down a little bit in those moments helps. This is a really cool approach, really getting curious about yourself, and that helps you figure out how well you can deal with harder emotions. So really thinking, like, what exactly are my habits? What do I do when I start to notice my anxiety going up? Do I shut down? Do I look at my phone? Do I start eating? Do I try to get everything done that I have to do in 5 minutes? Or am I able to sit in this a little bit longer? I'm feeling anxious. Okay, let me kind of sit with it. And really kind of do this thing where we pause and see if you can sit with it a little longer. And it honestly allows you to trust yourself more that, look, I can handle this difficult emotion, this really hard emotion that I'm having, and I can kind of be resilient from it. I don't have to have it take over. I don't have to have it lead to a habit that I'm not all that thrilled with. I can make a decision for what I want to do with this. And I think this is something that is important for all of us because we know uncomfortable experiences happen constantly. And so really having an approach to those experiences is so important in walking with yourself and saying, like, I can do this. I'm able to manage this moment. The other piece is really looking at your future. And I do think during this pandemic, so many of us have taken a step back and said, wow, I had no idea I was so busy before. And what sort of busy do I want to get back to when we're allowed to be busier? But really taking even a few minutes every single day to think about, what do I want for my future? What do I want life to look like as I keep going through it? What are the things that I'm doing right now that I haven't been able to do before that I want to make sure I can continue doing? Kind of, who do I want to be as I keep walking, you know, these directions? What do I want my days to really look like? So really bringing those things to your consciousness and spending time kind of listening to those answers will help you start reacting purposefully instead of just out of habit. Like, I got to avoid this emotion. It's a lot. Let me do something different so I don't have to feel it. No, hang with it for a little while and let it guide you. And really kind of try to shift out of that really busy day-to-day life to give yourself some moments to think through all of these things.
I've got to say, I think that Dr. Dalton did an absolutely outstanding job talking about mindfulness. So I'm going to go, the quick thing I will mention about this, I want to emphasize like the curiosity that goes along with the mindful practice and openness and acceptance that whatever emotion is happening is real and authentic and is what you are experiencing in the moment, that there doesn't need to be judgment of, I shouldn't be feeling this way. This is the wrong thing to be feeling. I am a servant taking care of my colleagues and the kids in the school. I shouldn't be the one feeling sad or angry about this, but really being aware of what you're experiencing in the moment and being really purposeful, not only in your thoughts, but also in your kind of body and breath and movement. The other thing I'll mention about this, especially coming from a behavioral background, is it takes practice. And so we could talk about this all day long, but where the rubber hits the road is building this into your daily lives and daily routines and thinking of it as building any new skill or set of muscle memories, that the more you practice and the more you build this in, the better at it you will be. And it's very easy for folks who are very good at building a regular mindfulness practice to still get swept up in emotion and not really understand what's going on in their life. And so for trying to give you a pep talk, like, don't give up, that mindfulness might be hard to get started. And actually there are a whole bunch of apps that I've researched and shared with clients in the past, but things like Calm and Headspace, there's some that are actually called the Mindfulness App or Mindfulness Daily that are free, that are really helpful in building this sort of regular skill set in meditation and monitoring your body and those sorts of things, which can really support the behavioral aspects of using mindful practice.
This next slide, these are like really concrete, cool things that you can do throughout your days to reduce stress. So taking in those deep breaths, really bringing up your shoulders when you breathe in, bringing down your shoulders when you breathe out, thinking or actually writing down three things that you're grateful for every morning and every evening. Take a moment to think through that. I love this one, the idea of every time you wash your hands, send out kind wishes or blessings to someone else for health or for healing. Write in a journal three things that you love each day. Connection with other people is so huge for all of us. And so even the act of checking in on other people, one person once a day, check in with them. How are they doing? How's life been going? It reduces your stress levels. Also, most of us, if we're interacting with other people in person, we have masks on now. And really looking into someone's eyes, can help form that connection at this point. So really taking the time to look at the people that you're talking with is helpful. Laughter, of course, even like make it a point to share jokes with each other or send funny things to each other. Going out in nature is always helpful. So get out there and really notice things. Take a moment to look at the tree or the rabbits or the squirrel. Stress goes way down as you're doing that. Music always helps. Really playing one song that you absolutely love every day can help reduce your stress. Food in certain ways can certainly reduce stress in healthy ways. So even taking time when you're eating something that you really enjoy to just savor it, you know, think about the smell or the taste or the texture that you really love about it. Actually getting up and shaking your entire body for several minutes or even a minute. Yes, Debbie's got it. can really improve stress levels. It's amazing how much that sort of kind of resets you. Acknowledging your feelings. We've talked about that enough. Acknowledge your hard feelings. Think to yourself about what was hard about that. Take a deep breath and then know that you can move forward from there. And then I think continuing to remind yourselves and each other that all of us in some degree are in this all together and that everybody is doing the best that they can given their tools and resources and kind of approaches to life.
We've heard a lot about meeting basic needs, but this is a list of things that are recommended for helping with professional well-being. Getting enough sleep, getting enough exercise, eating enough, all of these kinds of things that are going to keep your body healthy and meeting these basic needs without going into excess. But thinking about being biologically deprived is risky and may compromise your ability to take care of others. Taking breaks is really important. And one that's really important, I think, for this group in particular, because the demands don't end from the time you walk into the building to the time you walk out. And nobody is going to know your level of fatigue or exhaustion but you. And so you're the only one who can initiate a break and take care of yourself in this kind of way. Staying connected to friends and colleagues, respecting differences and knowing that even if people don't do the same, have the same approach to solving problems or addressing needs as you do, that there's space for everyone to be making a difference. staying updated is an interesting one because we want to rely on trusted news sources and participating in meetings and those kinds of things, but you want to avoid watching or listening to the news 24/7 or really getting into the comments in your local newspaper. I think there are lots of ways that kind of news can be grating. And graphic imagery and difficult messages can increase your stress and reduce your effectiveness at doing your job. And the last one that seems really important for all of us is to honor our service. So reminding yourself and others of the important work that you're doing every day, even if mistakes are made or it's not as optimal as you might want it to be, knowing that you are doing such important work every minute of every day.
I think we'll say at the end of this, these are all different websites that are resources for everyone. And again, we're happy to send these out if needed. And I'll stop screen sharing and we can do discussion or
that
questions.
Sounds great. That sounds great, Joan. There have been a couple of questions entered in, some chat and some other conversations. Do you have some specific, Ashley and Joan, some specific school nurse words of wisdom, given their very specific situation where they are the responsible souls of many lives in a situation that's really evolving and changing and that kind of stressful environment? Are there some very specific steps that you would, knowing what they do and how they do work, that you would offer them?
So, I mean, I think specifically for school nurses, again, part of this is having a routine and expectations for your own day, for what you want to get accomplished, for who you need to connect with, for the priorities. These are the families I need to talk to, the kids I need to check in with. These are the teachers I need to touch base with, those kinds of things. But also, I think during this time especially, and you guys are good at this anyway, but setting boundaries is so important, and being able to say no, like Ashley talked about, and you know, maybe developing scheduled times that people can come talk to you with questions about COVID or questions about wellness or that kind of stuff, so you're not just inundated all day long and you can sort of prepare yourself for those moments. Those are the things that come to my mind initially.
Ashley.
One of the things that I think about, I mean, it takes me back to the conversation with building level administrators and counselors and teachers not having time or space for their own wellness. And so being able to negotiate that and advocate for that for yourself and the school professionals that you work with, I think it's really hard because we want to be effective in our job in the moment. And so it's hard to make time for ourselves and our own well-being. But carving out the time, kind of like Joan said, I think is really important. So having those conversations with people who are making decisions in the building, I think having John on this call seems like there's some administrative support for this kind of thing, but really getting that administrative buy-in for wellness activities. I mean, the other thing I thought about was having this mindset that I have a lot of expertise to share and not thinking about getting out of the way of what other folks are managing, but being able to go in there and say, like, I actually know a whole lot about not only COVID and infection control, but also mental health and well-being, and really honoring your own expertise in those situations.
Yes, I am so honored by the fact that we have 63 people who took the mm-hmm. time to do a little self-care today. I just think that the words that you've shared and the methods are so rich. That one question I have is, it's hard to be in that uncomfortable space and just be curious about yourself. And many times I think we turn to some coping mechanisms that perhaps we don't even realize. Mm-hmm. And can you share some ideas about when we do find ourselves in these uncomfortable spots where we maybe do take a pause out of our busyness, and we start finding some, what are some positive coping mechanisms that you think that you can just jump in and do? And you listed a bunch, but what are your favorites for this specific population? And also, what other negative coping skills do you notice that you want to put people on to so they don't have to learn it the hard way, that you can just tell them, okay, watch for these?
So, I mean, one of my thoughts is one of the easiest are the deep breathing or progressive muscle relaxation. So deep breathing is easy. You can, you know, shut the door to your office or go to the bathroom that's in the nurse's office and just say, I'm, you know, the office is closed for a couple of minutes and let me take some deep breaths while I'm in here. Let me splash some cold water on my face. Progressive muscle relaxation, you guys can Google it and it'll lead you through everything, but it's really like you take different muscle groups and start even with your hands and squeeze them as tight as you can and then gradually let them go. And you'll notice the stress kind of leaving yourself as you do that with different muscle groups. And during that time, starting to kind of think about what got me going so much and what do I need to do with it. Those would be some of the easier ones to do in that situation. I mean, negative coping skills would be, you know, yelling at folks that are coming in the room, you know, sort of shutting the door, but kind of giving up on kind of solving whatever was at hand that brought you those emotions. You know, there are clear other negative coping strategies like alcohol use or going out for a cigarette isn't all that great either. Or, you know, like I said, kind of jumping on your phone and distract. I don't like this emotion, so I'm going to distract myself with something else. Distraction isn't always bad unless you're using it constantly to avoid feeling the hard emotion.
I really love breathing too, because it's something you're doing anyway. And so being like mindful that you're taking these deep breaths and like really feeling the air coming in and out of your body. And there's lots of guidance online about that. One of the things that I do, and I've had this experience quite a bit lately, when I'm like managing a big crisis and then I'll get like 3 emails and sort of medical record, red exclamation points, and like it's all happening at once, I work really hard to just think about my toes and my shoes and getting really grounded with where like my body is coming in contact with the earth, and just thinking about my feet and the weight on my feet or kind of where I'm sitting and thinking about that. And so really being mindful of like physical experiences, which in some ways is a distraction, but it's also really grounding in the moment. And so like people are knocking on your door and all of these demands are coming your way, like really, really thinking about your body. This is not necessarily a mindfulness activity, but also being comfortable saying, I don't know. Like not only know, but I don't know, and I can look into this. And so not really feeling like the urgency of demands and kind of setting that limit of, you know, I'm committed to success in this area, but I also understand that I don't have a great answer for you right now. And that is sort of micro distress tolerance, and being able to say, I don't know, and kind of look into it. In the question about monitoring agitation and things that are unhealthy, one of the things that I keep an eye on in myself and in my clients is bringing it home. And so being agitated at work about things or being in that liminal space, but then being home and being really upset and taking it out on kids or spouses, partners, or those kinds of folks, that it's really kind of this displaced agitation.
How about caffeine and chocolate? Are those benefits or not? Are they just crutches that we need to give up and give away?
I would say I would not rely on those as your main source of stress relief. however, I mean, I think those are the things, whatever the food is, I wouldn't go to food as one of our, you know, main lists of sort of stress relief. But if there is a food that you really look forward to and can provide you a moment to say, like chocolate, this is so good, you know, I'm going to have a moment with some chocolate right now. That will for sure reduce stress. Caffeine and chocolate has some caffeine in it. And both of those things can increase anxiety levels, blood pressure, et cetera. So, you know, consuming large amounts of those, I think, are going to do the opposite effect for you.
Do you think large is relative, though?
See where this is going.
Well, and I also think that this is where the mindful practice comes in, too, because if you are like indulging in like a pumpkin spice latte in the morning and like you really savor the experience, that's one thing. Or if you have like really you have one chocolate at the end of the day and like you let it sit in your mouth and you really enjoy that experience, that's different than like plowing through a box of chocolate or, you know, working through your second pot of coffee for the day.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm looking at the time and we are at time. So Jen or Mark, could you see if those slides can come back up for our closure, please? All right. Can you see them? Here they come. Thank you very much, you guys. Well, thank you so much for coming. I'm so sorry for the beginning piece. Technology did not work in my hands today, so I am sorry about that. I want to remind you that we have session 4, which is about student wellness, coming up. Really share this with your friends. I'm so happy that you took the time to give us your insight and your time and willingness to think about yourselves for a little bit, because that way you'll be worth something for others. That's awesome. And so you can see down below that there's our link, the Children's Omaha Back to School. So any COVID information that you need that we've had, our sessions are there, and how you can link on to each of the sessions is also there. So please use that link often. Okay, you want to give me the next slide, please? Should be another slide that gives us the, there.
I think the one before had, there you go.
Well, there it is. Look back one. There you go. This is the link to the evaluation. So we really want your feedback, because we're trying very hard to meet the need that you have for information, for comfort, in any way that we can. I know if Kim were here, she would be cheerleading and saying, you know, keep up the good work that you're doing, and we would like to help you do that. So please give us your feedback, and this is our evaluation for the session. And I think that's all. Anyone else have anything for the greater good? And otherwise, we'll sign out. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a marvelous day. Take care. Come see us again.